morning and welcome to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestinian Canadian Community Radio Show. You are listening to CKUT Radio McGill 90.3 FM in Montreal, and I'm your host, Laith Marouf. Under the Olive Tree has two main purposes. We're not just a radio show. We first provide the space and the equipment to Palestinian youth across Canada to learn the skills of radio in order for them to reach our second goal, which is producing content that truly represents the Palestinian community. This week, we have two great interviews regarding issues of Palestinian children under occupation. The first is conducted with Rana Nashashibi, a psychiatrist who is also the director of the Palestinian Counseling Center in Jerusalem. And the second is an interview with George Abu Zuluk, the director of the Palestine chapter of Defense the Children International, and he joins us from Ramallah. The last part of the show is poetry from Rafif Zayad, the Palestinian Toronto poet. She performed in November in a fundraiser for Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, and we aired the first part of her poetry. And after a lot of calls and emails that we received asking for the rest of her set, we decided to air them today. Our first song of the day is by Marcel Khalifa and is titled Umitlai Albal, which means come to my mind. It's a very sad song. We listen to it.
هالمرسال لسرجت الفرس ولبعت هالمرسى.
That was Marcel Khalifa with a song titled Umi Tlai Albal, Come to My Mind. The first interview of the day is conducted by Sabine Freesinger, and it's an interview with George Abu Zulot from Ramallah. He is the director of the Palestine chapter of Defense the Children International. Here is the interview.
We are speaking today to George Abu Zulot. He is director of Defense for Children International in Palestine. He is speaking to us today directly from Ramallah. Mr. Al-Zulaf, hello and welcome to Under the Olive Tree.
Hello.
Mr. Al-Zulaf, can you tell us a little bit about the children in Palestine? Describe to our listeners the conditions under which Palestinian children are forced to live in the West Bank and Gaza Strip.
First of all, according to the Palestinian Central Bureau last statistics, Palestinian children consist around 53% of our community, which means around 1.6 million Palestinian children under 18 are living under the Israeli occupation, the West Bank, Gaza Strip, including East Jerusalem. And since the beginning of the Intifada, the Palestinian children were paying the highest price in this conflict, and more than 728 Palestinian children lost their lives in this intifada. Just since the beginning of this year, 52 Palestinian children were killed by the Israeli army and settlers in the West Bank and Gaza. Also, I would like to highlight that more than 13,000 Palestinian children were injured in this intifada, and more than 3,000 Palestinian children were arrested. Currently, there are around 350 still in the Israeli prisons and detention centers, where they face several forms of abuse and torture, and denying their basic human rights, including access to education and family visits. In general, what I can say that currently the socio-economical situation, the high number of unemployment, the Israeli policy of house demolishing, and also with building the apartheid wall, Palestinian children were highly affected. You have most of the Palestinian children, more than 30% of them, are living under poverty line in unemployed families. Access to education is highly violated and sometimes on daily basis, especially on areas affected by the wall. And recently in Jerusalem area, where thousands of children were denied access to education and health services, since all the hospitals in East Jerusalem now are inside the wall. This situation also, and the Israeli ongoing practices, including the house demolishing policy, had a high impact on Palestinian children's psychological well-being. And I believe that the Israeli policies will continue to have a high impact, even on the future, on the well-being of Palestinian children.
You talk about the effects of the occupation on Palestinian children, but can you describe those a little bit more to our listeners? Because for many people in Montreal, it's very difficult to imagine what it's like to live under occupation.
Yeah, I can give like an example. Recently, we conducted a research or a needs assessment of the psychosocial impact of the Israeli detention on Palestinian children. Most of the children who are released from the Israeli prisons and detention centers drop out from schools because they don't have suitable assistance and rehabilitation and reintegration into the community after being released from prison. Besides this, the traumatic experience they faced during interrogation and torture had a direct impact on their psychology. One of the main problems that they face, for example, is the nightmares. They are afraid of being arrested again and being tortured. And the policies and the practices against them continue to impact them even after their release from a prison. Recent studies also on the psychosocial impact of the Israeli policies against Palestinian children in the occupied territories, more than 72% of Palestinian children faced one way or another of symptoms as a result of the Israeli policies, beginning from nightmares, bedwetting, that their achievements in the schools and the education system also decrease, other symptoms of try to be more isolated, afraid to go out, etc. They watch, they see on daily basis images that affect their mental health. These all ongoingly have an impact on their daily lives. And nowadays we are conducting another research on the impact of the wall on the right to education. And just last week we visited several areas on the north of the West Bank where Israel already finished the building of the wall around Qalqilia, Ras Atiyah and other villages where children have to cross the Israeli checkpoints or the gates on this wall on daily basis, and which resulted now children, they hate education because it's connected to these bad experiences when they stand long hours under the sun or under the rain at winter in order to be security checked and to check their school bags in order to go to the school. So these are some examples where the daily practices from the occupation forces have a damaging impact on children's daily lives and will have a great impact on their future. Last year, we followed up a case of a child who was 12 years old at the time of his arrest. And this child was subjected to sexual abuse during interrogation by his interrogators and harassment. This was reported to our lawyer when he visited him. And when we tried to appeal against his case, this argument was rejected, and we used this as a kind of releasing him because he was abused, his very young child, with no protection, under isolation, in an isolation cell inside the prison. The child tried to commit suicide 3 times. And we reported to Amnesty International about his case, and they adopted and began to campaign around his case. And finally, we succeeded to release this child from detention after 3 months. And we were lucky also that there was another Palestinian NGO tried to help the child after his release to reduce the impact of this traumatic experience on this child. This child is from a Palestinian town called Jericho, and this reflects the difficult experience they experience under education, under interrogation. We have lots of other cases. And by the way, nowadays most of children are arrested from areas affected by the wall because the nonviolent resistance is going on daily basis against the apartheid wall. And all people from those villages and areas who are resisting the wall because it takes their living, their land, their olive trees, etc. So they try in all possible ways to resist the Israeli bulldozers. And at the end, they end up in prisons. Just last week, we received 20 cases in one day of children arrested from one village near Ramallah. In all their accusations were related to demonstrations against the wall. And the minimum, they take 6 months in prison. Even last month, the Israeli military court, in its decision regarding one child who was accused of resisting the wall, he was sentenced for 10 months in detention. And it's the first time the military judge mentioned in his decision that because he was creating obstacles in building the wall that will protect the Israeli security. So it's like they are making obstacles in front of the public safety, etc. And this is a very dangerous development, by the way. Like, children are being punished severely for nothing but because they are resisting a wall that is supposed to be destroyed according to the international law. So they are paying a heavy price, and besides this, they are subjected to several ways of physical and mental abuse inside the prisons and detention centers. Currently, there are, exactly according to our statistics, around 347 Palestinian children in detention. This is till the end of November. There are 5 girls also in detention in Tilmont prison. The rest are boys. There are around 35 children under administrative detention. Administrative detention is based on the British emergency laws that without charging, she is without fair trial, without anything, just they take the child from home and put him into prison. Because according to Israeli statement, they say he's dangerous to the public security. And they claim that they have secret evidence against the child. And they continue to use this since long time against Palestinian children and adults.
In your October 2005 issue of Children Behind Bars, you talk about demonstrations at the apartheid wall, demonstrations at checkpoints, and several child arrests that occurred following those actions. You noticed several discrepancies in sentencing, for example. Can you explain that to our listeners?
I think the major thing is that the international community should take practical steps towards forcing the Israeli government to abide by its obligations according to international law. Without this, Israel will not do anything. And this is based on our experience. And we have the concluding observations from the Committee on the Rights of the Child, the UN Committee, about Israel since 2002. There is special things related to children in detention. There is the special rapporteur on Palestine, John Dugard, highlighted this also. He asked to open an investigation about Israeli practices in prisons and detention centers, violations to the right to life, and the excessive use of force against children, etc. But none of these things there was any investigation about. Israel still refuses to accept that the Convention on the Rights of the Child is applied in the occupied territories and it has an obligation to implement it there. And the violations continues. Now, what's needed is an urgent action, practical steps by the international community to force Israel to stop. We don't want the occupation to offer the protection to Palestinian children's rights, because the occupiers, the oppressors, cannot offer this kind of protection. The international community is responsible to make sure their Palestinian children's rights are protected by stopping Israel and forcing Israel to stop its daily oppression and violations to the rights of Palestinian children, from basic their basic human right to life, to education, to health, to access to services in general, to protection from all forms of abuse and exploitation. This is a daily thing that happens from the occupation forces, but nobody is doing anything. This is our message to the people in Canada, and to all people in North America, to the Western community, that we believe that the grassroots movement, the people all over the world, do not accept that this happens in front of them and nobody is moving or doing anything. Mm-hmm. There should be also our allies, our grassroots people, the students' movements all over the world, to do something, to move ahead, to campaign and to lobby and to raise their voices in order to stop these violations, daily violations and systematic violations that happens to Palestinian children on a daily basis of the occupied Palestinian territories.
Now, Mr. El-Zulaf, on a more personal level, do you have children yourself?
Yeah, actually, I am married and I have 3 children.
And what are some of the conversations you have with them? How do you explain as an adult to them the situation and what is going on?
Believe me, it's not an easy issue. It's very, very difficult. They have my oldest girl, 6 years. And during the invasion, she was around 3 years. And the Israeli army entered to my house and they shot at that house. And since that time, she was terrorized and affected. Her psychological health was affected. And up till now, by the way, when anybody rings the bell of our house, she gets afraid because she, in her unconscious, she afraid from loud voices because she heard the bullets and the sounds of the bombs, etc. Whenever we go, I am originally from Bethlehem. I moved to Ramallah because of the checkpoints. But whenever I go to see my family in Bethlehem, she had bed waiting because once we reach the checkpoint, she gets afraid. And whatever I explain, and sometimes she gets afraid from Palestinian policemen in the streets. I try to explain to her, no, these policemen are for us, to protect us, and the others are against us. But why they exist there? Who are they, Baba? What are they are doing? Why they don't want us to pass? These are questions that are always very difficult for us to answer. And whenever we explain to them, these are our occupiers, they will go one day. And this is like these stories. There are lots of questions raised in minds, and maybe other, what the Israeli propaganda say, we teach our children hatred. But no, we don't teach them hatred, but you cannot teach them to love the occupiers. They will hate the occupiers themselves because they oppress them. They feel it in their hearts, in their minds, in their daily lives.
Well, thank you so much. Our thoughts go out to you and to your family, to your colleagues in Palestine, and to everyone in your community who are facing the occupation. Thank you so much, Mr. El-Zulaf, for joining us today. We were speaking to George Abu El-Zulaf. He is the Director of Defense for Children International Palestine Section, and he was speaking to us from Ramallah.
Thank you so much, and it's my pleasure also.
Yo, our pity's words leaking the herd, sleeping disturbed. We serve, breathing and walking as a reason to truly work in this universe. Explain like Stephen Hawking's ruling earth, it would be unduly birth of two beings. Defying these hymns till the death, head to head like Siamese twins, rested in bed, testing this flesh infested, ingested this mess, fested with less questions, added, laughing at the best west, then checked in for a test lesson. Let's guess it's immigration in them, disseminational stem, and then it's read in papers that men spread, pretending to make them. And your trends are descent from raping, defend your acres and leave the next generation of children vacant. Awakening from being scared, scarred, staring bars and pray, wondering if the rareness of God is sacred or fraud. I don't care if it's hard to believe. Belief is propagated to stop compilations, knowing populations prone to hatred, displaced at home. Save you in the states and emigrants, embedded in Confederate rhetoric, taken in vain like heroin. Staying calm weather, we don't belong together, like Islam and terror, while America bombed the rebels. True lies, calling suicide bombings. Who's alive? Time lives, lives, you survive and find wrath to divide. Classified, lady drafted in, clashing God. The first to blame, the last to claim, cash for pacified. You're pacified. You're caught in the modern day slaughter of vitamins, unwillingly flying, is killing me like Muhammad Adas. Man, how is it modern? They caught on tenagles, reported by men recorded. A process of unconsciousness. I'm lost in all this nonsense, like a panhandle conference. Can't stand up often like paraplegic. Scattered media channels that feed your paddled amnesia. Battles that lead you to throat, scapegoat and vocalize. Punched in like state voting, open minds, hope and hate spoken. helps it.
Welcome to hell.
The gates open with snakes floating,
yelping for help.
The war is like Yeltsin with your cause of social order and melting shells and rooms where I'm dwelling. Sunken low, stuck on words. Fuck the world like humping glow.
Fucking weapons,
sulking and bawling and filing for fucking. I'm intolerant, running, screaming, McCollin like Hulking politics. Up and sorry for not following functions.
I'm hollered at lunches
like Israeli cooks breaking bread, baking hot out the oven. I'm not out for love, distrusting the outer glove hand of the dotted above us. The dotted weather raining till death will become us.
Invested is
the rest that I summon. Drums and lots of depth design, but blind, deaf and dumb and designed to lessen the 100 percentage behind replenished weapons. We felt this madness approaching, intent on defending its relics for ends expended.
Stay in calm weather,
we don't belong together like Islam and terror while America bombed Herrera.
True as lies, calling suicide bombings. Who's alive? Time lives, lives, you'll survive and find wrath to divide. Classified, rain and draft and name, clash and die. The first to blame, the last to claim, cash for pacified.
To be pacified.
That was George Abu Zulot, director of the Palestine chapter of Defense the Children International, being interviewed by Sabine Friesinger, our Montreal collective member. It was followed by a track from Montreal's Iraqi hip-hop band, Euphrates. The track was titled Watermelons and is from their first album, A Bend in the River. The album was released in 2003. We will go to our second interview, and it's also conducted by one of our Montreal collective members, Linda Tabar. She interviews Rana Nashashibi. She's a psychiatrist and the director of the Palestinian Counseling Center in Jerusalem. She talks to us on the psychological effects of the wall.
I'd like to welcome you, Dr. Nashashibi, to our program Under the Olive Tree, and thank you for joining us today. Dr. Nashashibi, can you please discuss the impact that this intifada is having on Palestinian children? Recently, Dr. Iyad Sarraj in Gaza denounced the Israeli F-16 fighter planes that break the sound barrier over Gaza as an overt strategy that seeks to instill fear in the population. As a psychologist and director of the Palestinian Counseling Center, can you please discuss the consequences of some of these Israeli tactics which seek to instill anxiety in the Palestinian population, keeping in mind the broader context of this intifada in which the Israeli occupation forces are imposing various forms of collective punishment on the Palestinian population?
Well, the Israelis have this kind of, I believe, a systematic policy of a psychological warfare against the Palestinians in general, and the children, of course, being the more vulnerable, if you like. Vulnerable because of their age, their developmental stage, their state of being at a certain point in their time. For them, makes them sometimes more influenced more by all these tactics and by the psychological warfare. What I mean by that is that the children are still building their ego. They are fortifying it. They are still building their identity. They're building their character. So the kind of experiences that they go through affect very much in how they see themselves, in how they see their situation, in how they see their future. So that's what makes them more vulnerable. So when the children are systematically exposed to acts of violence in general, then that is very dangerous on two things. One of them, and in two directions. One of them is that violence becomes something that is actually incorporated within their character and within their psyche. And many researchers in the world have shown that children, if they're exposed at certain ages, if they're exposed to so much violence, then they think that this is the way to solve problems, and it becomes incorporated within their character. They're not in a situation where they will be able to to kind of differentiate between when it can be done and when it cannot be done and make all these judgments all the time. So they think this is justified, you know, violence is justified and it is the way that you use in order to solve your problems, for example. That's one thing. The other thing, which is also frightening, is that, you know, they become, like I said before, they become too anxious and too helpless sometimes, that they become debilitated and not really having the wish to continue trying. And that's also, again, very, very frightening. From our experiences, you know, here in the center and also from the study that we did in Qalqilia, for example, on the effect of the wall. The wall, of course, is the wall that has been put by Israel around many cities around the West Bank, and it has actually caused in so many places the complete isolation of towns and villages from each other. And I mean, we had this study that was done on 1,000 people in that area, in the Qalqilia area. We chose Qalqilia because Qalqilia was the first area in the West Bank that the wall was actually built around it as a governorate. So what we saw is that other than the wall being damaging the economy of that area, of course, because in Qalqilia specifically, the wall caused many people to lose a lot of their land. Thousands of dunams of agricultural land was actually expropriated by the Israeli army or the Israeli government on the pretext that that the wall will be going through, for example, those areas. So, of course, the loss of land meant the loss of income for so many people, and therefore the economic situation of the families there deteriorated. I mean, people who used to live by cultivating their land and actually selling their crops all of a sudden found themselves in a situation where they have no land to actually cultivate or any crops to sell. So they went into poverty. So there was this dimension, which is poverty. Another dimension, which is a big, big dimension, which is loss, you know, loss, because all of a sudden you have a land and all of a sudden you don't. So you are actually losing something that is very important and very dear to you. I mean, we Palestinians, find a land or think of land as being a very precious thing in our life. And we really feel a lot confident when we have land, because for us it has a lot of meaning of putting a base for us, feeling confident, feeling more safe. So all of a sudden, all this safety and all this security possibly of having a land is lost from you. So you have the loss. And then the other aspect is the violence, because you have the wall, you have the army, you have the terrorizing, because you have the gates that are electrified, you have the army jeeps that are roaming, you have the settlers who actually are also around, and most of the land that has been expropriated from those villages are being used in order to expand the settlements, which are very much dominating the landscape in the West Bank and very much in certain areas, especially like Qalqilia, to expand those settlements. So you have the terror of the settlers who just, you know, use guns, and all of them are armed and can be shooting and killing at any point in time, and terrorizing people from even going to their land or checking on their olive trees or whatever. You have the army, you have the poverty. So in view of all these things, of course, the psyche of any human being would be very much affected. How it affected children, we found that it affected them a lot by increasing all the anxiety-related psychological symptoms, like, for example, loss of sleep and kind of insomnia among the children. And, of course, this state of insomnia makes them also lose concentration. It makes them not achieve very well on their studies, and therefore their academic performance deteriorates. Also, their effect, it causes many of the children to have bedwetting because, again, they are anxious, and not so many times they feel able to show their anxiety and therefore or fear, and therefore sometimes they wet their beds in the evening because they're afraid of going the next day through the gates. I'm talking about children in our study who are in their, for example, fourth or fifth grade, who in certain areas have to go through the gates of that wall on a daily basis. So they have to confront the army insults and the Israeli army insults and their terrorizing, and also their, how I described it before, their sporadic, behavior of sometimes not allowing them to go just because they don't, for no other reason than they don't want them to go. So, of course, the children are anxious. They are afraid. They don't feel that there is any sense of safety or control in their life, and therefore that will affect their sense of achievement, their self-esteem, their motivation to be better, to want to excel, whether in their studies or in their daily life, so forth. And of course, I mean, the effects are much more than that, but then it's very hard in the context now, this interview, to tell you exactly the details. But of course, there are a lot of really damaging effects on the psyche of the Palestinian child because army measures against the children.
Many of the listeners don't really have a visual reference for the wall. I saw the wall when I was in Palestine last summer, and it's so dehumanizing. I don't think one can even describe it in words. And you mentioned the gates that to pass through. I mean, this is something which is, I mean, the level of degradation and just stripping people of any sense of their humanity. I mean, I don't think that comes across in so much of the way that the wall is being covered, and obviously also in the media, which has been very complicit with the construction of this apartheid wall, calling it a security fence. So, I don't know, maybe you could briefly just elaborate on what this means at an ordinary level for children in terms of their sense of self, their sense of hope in a future in their own homeland. How can you actually begin to cope and create mechanisms to counter that for Palestinian children?
Actually, it's like you said, it's very hard for somebody to really describe the wall and its, its destructive effect. I mean, the way that it's built, the way that it looks, the ugliness, the environmental hazard that it has caused on the areas. I mean, and on every aspect, it's really very hard to describe it. One has to see it. It was very important that some artists decided to do some films like Simon Bitton. I don't know, maybe I would recommend that some of your listeners would see her film called The Wall, because that will give them an image of what we're talking about. Talking about a wall, concrete in many areas, then that's 8 meters tall. So if we're talking about a child who is like a 1 meter or 1.2, and he is approaching this enormous thing, then the first impression would be to make the child feel so small in front of this big monument, in order to make you feel like you are confronting a major monster that you would feel a lot of fear of. So just I'm saying about the image, physical aspect of it. Now, on the other hand, we're talking, like I said, you know, we're talking about a situation. For example, there are two villages in the Qalqilya area. These were two villages out of the five where we did our studies. One is called Taba, Mgharat Taba, and the other one is called Raftiri. These two villages are smaller villages. And, of course, because they are small, they share only one school between the two villages. And the school is actually outside the wall for one of the villages. And so the children, in order to go to school, and I'm talking about elementary level children, they, in order to go to their school, they have to cross the gate of the wall twice a day, once at least, once in the morning and one in the afternoon when they have to go home. And the army sometimes let these children in summertime when it's very hot, and sometimes in the rain when it's in the winter when it's very rainy and it's very cold, wait for hours just outside the gate until the jeep comes and open the gate to let the children pass. And therefore, the children, like I said, are just all the time made to feel like they are helpless. They are not in control. They can do anything. There is this power, this, which the Israelis want very much to do, is to make the Palestinians, especially the children, like I said, because they are in that age, to feel very small in contrast to the big army, the wall, everything that the Israeli army, the Israeli government is trying to impose, all these symbols of power that shows that we are in control, we are in power, and you are nothing in comparison, and therefore we're capable to do to you whatever we want. And that's what they want to do, to intimidate us as Palestinians, to make us feel like we cannot do anything to fight back. And that's basically what they want, to make us feel we are not able to fight back, because I think what the Israelis cannot comprehend because of their sense of power, because they are the fourth greatest power, or they have the greatest army in the world, or the fourth greatest army, or they have the state-of-the-art military equipment or whatever thing. They cannot understand how we as Palestinians would, who have very, you know, like nothing but our willpower, our small things, our stone, have been able to keep fighting and struggling against this willpower. So they want to systematically work on intimidating. They want to make us feel more and more isolated, intimidated. For those who don't cannot understand what the Israelis are doing, should think of how the ghettos in the Second World War were actually built around the Jewish communities in certain areas of Europe. In wars, the Israeli army or the Israeli government is actually in certain areas building certain ghettos around people and really like isolating or actually surrounding people with things, with the wall that makes certain communities be like a ghetto in certain areas. That's basically the most I can describe about the situation.
No, that's great. Dr. Ronen Netashibi, I'd really like to thank you for joining us today all the way from Jerusalem. Thank you for your time and we wish you well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was the Rana Anashashibi, director of the Palestinian Counseling Center in Jerusalem, speaking on the psychological effects of the occupation and the wall on children. Rana was interviewed by our Montreal Collective member, Linda Tabar. We have next beautiful poetry from Toronto poet, a Palestinian woman by the name of Rafif Zayad. Rafif is a survivor of the Sabra and Shatila massacre in Lebanon. And the first two poems that you will hear directly speak of her personal experience, seeing things happen as a child. listen carefully, because the words are very heavy and the stories that she is telling are unbelievable. It is a wonder that Palestinian children survived these 100 years of colonization in Palestine with sanity. It is a wonder that Palestinian children like Rafif survive these massacres, survive the occupation, and still be able to say poetry as beautiful as she is.
I'm from a refugee camp in Lebanon where most of us went through the 1982 invasion of Lebanon, and I can safely say a lot of us survived with the severe psychological disorders, many members of my family, and whenever we go to doctors, the first thing they tell us is, take a pill. Just take a pill. You know, everything is fine, Prozac, Xanax, all that shit works, just take a pill. And this, the poem I'm about to do is a true story of, that happened to someone and how everyone is dealing with it. I just can't see you cry, curled up in a ball, next to a man who loved his revolution more than he ever loved you. Not knowing that you were a walking, talking, breathing Palestine, carried her on your back and in your womb for 57 years waiting for liberation. You were the one who sat on the cold, bare cement of an immigration detention cell and gave birth to your first girl. Carried the memories of those maimed and tortured through airports in luggage that would be checked and double-checked because you had the wrong last name. And all your doctors deliberate and say, just take a pill and the voices in your head will disappear. Numb every thought of suicide. Erase years of dispossession. Your brothers lined up against the wall as you pressed their dead bodies into your chest and let their blood soak your dress. But they want you to take a pill to erase your history, our history, stateless and refugees, while others live on our land. They handed out smallpox blankets yelling about savages, and they hand out death from US-made planes yelling about terrorists and want you to take a pill to erase your history, our history, stateless and refugees. But between your body and their reality lie uprooted olive trees, orange groves, and Palestine. And I just can't see you cry, curled up in a ball next to a man who loved his revolution more than he ever loved you. Not knowing that you were a walking, talking, breathing Palestine, carried her on your back and in your womb for 57 years, waiting, still waiting for liberation. Thank you. A lot of people at different times in my life ask me why I fight, especially when they hear what refugee camp I'm from. And it's always at the most awkward moments, at like parties. People will be like, oh, so what happened to you, blah, blah, blah. So I wrote this poem so people could stop asking me. So please don't come afterwards and ask me. Why do I fight? I fight for the woman draped in black, still looking for bodies in Shatila. For the woman who taught me Palestine patiently, passionately, in the smell of oranges from Yaffa, and the key on our old house hanging on the wall. For the woman who hid me under the bed silently, calmly, pretending everything was all right when nothing was all right, and told me that by the end of a prayer, it will all be done. And by the end of that prayer, it was all done. For the little girl who watched and watched that September 82 as Sharon put the snake in the baby's crib and asked it to settle the score. Watched Palestine lie screaming, raped. Watched Palestine lie screaming, raped by 18 men, her legs spread apart, and the little girl could not understand as most people slept. Do you remember where you were that night? As they pissed on her warm body, I lost the words, I lost the time, I lost even the pain, only kept her will to fight. That's why I fight for the woman who couldn't watch me grow up, a nameless martyr from Shatila. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm going to do my last poem, and every time I perform this poem, somebody comes up afterwards and offers to give me anger management. And if anybody here is willing to pay for anger management classes, please go ahead. That would be more than welcome. I'm sure it's less expensive than Prozac. Having said that, I wrote this poem when we were doing an action at York University against Caterpillar, because Caterpillar is the company that makes the bulldozers that bulldoze Palestinian homes. And they specifically make this bulldozer so it could bulldoze homes. That's what it's designed for. And it's the same bulldozer that killed Rachel Corrie. So we were doing an action on that day, and I was lying dead as a Palestinian civilian, because whenever we do these, I refuse to be the Israeli. And the Zionist came, kicked me, spit at me, and said, "You deserve to be raped before you have terrorist children." So this poem is for that guy. اسمحوا لي أن أتكلم بلساني العربي قبل أن يحتلوا لغتي أيضا. Allow me to speak my Arab tongue before they occupy my language as well. Allow me to speak my mother tongue so her words can come through me before they colonize her memory as well. I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. All my grandfather ever wanted to do was wake up at dawn and watch my grandmother kneel and pray in a village hidden between Yaffa and Haifa. My mother was born under an olive tree on a soil they say is no longer mine. But I will cross their barriers, their checkpoints, their dam, apartheid walls, and return to my homeland. I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. Did you hear my sister screaming yesterday as she gave birth at a checkpoint with Israeli soldiers looking between her legs for their next demographic threat? Called her baby girl Janine. And did you hear Amne Muna screaming behind their prison bars as they tear-gassed her cell, "We are returning to Palestine"? I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. But you tell me this womb inside of me will only bring you your next terrorist, beard-wearing, gun-waving, towel-head sand nigger. You tell me I send my children out to die, but those are your copters, your F-16s in our skies. And let's talk about this terrorism business for a second. Wasn't it the CIA that killed Allende and Lumumba? And who the fuck trained Osama in the first place? My grandparents didn't run around like clowns with white capes and white hoods on their heads lynching black people. Let me break it to you. There is no good occupation and no moral army. I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. So one more motherfucker ask me if I can belly dance, live in a tent, and own a camel. And one more immigration officer stop me and frisk me for having a tan he only wishes he had. And who's that brown woman screaming in a demonstration? Sorry, should I not scream? Forgot to be your every Orientalist dream. Genie in a bottle, belly dancer, harem girl, soft-spoken Arab woman. Yes, master. No, master. Thank you for the peanut butter sandwiches raining down on us from your B-52s, master. Yes, my liberators are here to kill my children and call them collateral damage. I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. So let me just tell you, this womb inside of me will only bring you your next rebel. She'll have a rock in one hand and a rifle in the other. I am an Arab woman of color. Beware my anger. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. You're all wonderful.
That was Rafif Zayadi, the Palestinian poet from Toronto, speaking of her experiences in the Sabra and Shatila massacre in 1982. Our next week's episode will be dedicated to Christmas and Hanukkah in Palestine. We'll be interviewing Christian and Jewish Palestinians mourning and celebrating in the holidays. I will leave you with one last song. It is again from Euphrates, Montreal hip-hop band. The song is titled Buona Testa Antisocial Club, and is from their first album, A Bend in the River, that was released in 2003. Until we meet next week under the olive tree, Palestine, Hurra, Abiya, Free Palestine.
What? Man, so many questions. Where can I find the answers?
Go talk to home dukes. Confused because I'm Arab and assume I own nukes. walk and leave me alone. Can't you see I'm deep in this zone?
Yeah, what up,
I need to be home. I'm sick of people at clubs reeking in stone. Peace in this love I seek is it known. Like peaks, humans achieve to be cloned. The reason this song's recorded, I'm by the hair. I need a broad and some care. And all people want me to do is rap like Intifada Rare. A vocal oddity. They walk in front of me. I'm antisocial cause I'm out of B. I'm no commodity. Riddle peeps open. Bitch, what are you smoking? Oil fields burning in the Middle East. Loking like hang, hoping this pain won't stain. Heartbroken like pacemakers. They breaking down till they stop stroking. Your ego hates scoping and hearing this ration. Play me your music like Beethoven. I ain't hearing it naturally. Fearing this national. You could call me an army slave. A conceited bastard. Or an asshole like Donkey Gray. When I meet cats, it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance. Painting my face and questioning and testing my patience. Like doctors walking with ants. I'm talking as fast as possible. I just don't care anymore. Like Iraqi hospital. Rod pet project. Product of rotten flesh. Hiding that. Close talk. It's awkward greetings and awful breath. Talking being all the quality surrounding self. Understanding is astounding. 2012. Rod pet project. Product of rotten flesh. Hiding that. Close talk. It's awkward greetings and awful breath. Talking being all the quality surrounding self. Understanding is astounding. 2012. So quit the domino. You hawking women cause you wanna hominem. Arming her calmly with no harm to her. Thermometer reads and see your mom and a woman. Read it in text. A blind motherfucker like Oedipus Rex. Leaving his next obsession is social comments. Confessions through vocal signage. Deceptions is Aryan Clarimin. Humanitarian. Bearded kin. Sumerian. Twins of age. Pairing him. Too ill appearing him. Abandoned vote and a tester. Antisocial club. Enchanted local talks and breath drags. And all is less bad than positive. Half-life written like parks. Left abs. Inoperative moments. Stopping opponents. Holding guns. Unless you pull it, bullets of eyes. Hood and pulling no bullets of prize. Bullets, it's putting it die. Full of the sheep, died, willing skin, eating lives. 9-11, 10 follow, 7 men guard of women. And all peace grows within them. If each knows our limits, to teach wrong from living strong. In full sight, staying disciple. Claiming this life will end. Remaining in sight, same in sight. You befriend the name despite you. Apart from this, a chartered gift. Fossils, apostles, we're all narcissists. Hostels and spars and lost in this modern metropolis. Burn bushes with lies. W sniffing and chopping. Rod pet project. Product of rotten flesh. Hiding that. Close talk, it's awkward greetings and awful breath. Talking being all the quality surrounding self. With understanding is astounding. 2012. Rod pet project. Product of rotten flesh. Hiding that. Close talk, it's awkward greetings and awful breath. Talking being all the quality surrounding self. With understanding is astounding. 2012.
Man, for real, what the fuck you talking about? You so antisocial and shit.
What do you mean?
Didn't even answer my question. I'm trying to figure out the essence to life. You talking about all how you hate people and all that shit.
I don't hate people.
What's really going on, man?
Nothing.
The mind of the narcissist. What's really going on? I mean,
nothing.
Shit, I know it's fucked up and all, but
bored.
Just nuts.
For real. Stash your factory.